Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line? Now 20% lower. Family plans? Also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number, not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick here to continue our expectations series, talking about Keaton Mitchell and Trenton Simpson, two Ravens who may each be at a crossroads this year. Joining us to talk about them is Michael Crawford, one of our good friends and longtime contributor to the show. Michael, how are you doing?
Hey, Ken, I'm doing really good. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to talking about these two guys. I like doing this series, so I'm excited about it.
All right, fantastic. It's not a really an undercard series, but why don't we talk about Trenton Simpson first? Obviously a little bit of a disappointing year in 2024 that he was kind of thrust a role on a silver platter, more or less, and was unable to pick it up.
Yeah, you know, the stars all aligned for him to kind of step into that Patrick Queen role, you know, at least Patrick Queen towards, you know, his last year or two with the Ravens, where you're, you know, the no questioned guy next to Roe, right? You're never coming off the field. It's you and Roe all the time. And, you know, that potential was there for Trenton. And, you know, I think in terms of snap load started off, it appeared that the team sort of saw him that way as well, just in terms of snap load. I'm sure we'll get into play and specifics, but then that decreased as the season went on. And as they started that sort of linebacker by committee, like people who are in fantasy football hear about running back by committee all the time, linebacker by committee, probably not as good of a thing. So it was interesting that's the way that it ended up going, but there were some reasons for that. And, you know, unfortunately they happened, but hopefully Trenton can bounce back and sort of take that role over again.
Let's take a little look at the evolution of what you're talking about, because he started off the season as a three down weak side linebacker. Beginning in week three, he basically lost his dime role. Now, it's a big thing when you lose your dime role, when you lose the ability to stay on the field on passing downs. That is a big component of your play, even if it's only losing 20 or 25 snaps a game, or maybe even 15 in some cases. The problem is you're losing your highest leverage snaps. And so it's not good from that perspective to lose that good. My notes just came back on in time here, but the experienced a lot of power problems as we're recording this podcast, just in case you're wondering. So anyway, Kyle Hamilton moved in to play that dimeback role during that time. And then went on with that way for a while. And then in week 12, the Ravens all of a sudden began alternating outside linebacker by series with him and Chris Board. Okay, so it doesn't really involve Harrison in a big way yet, but it's basically him and Board splitting time beginning in week 12. Then in week 15, Orr changes it again and says, okay, Harrison and Board are going to split the role. And Harrison was still playing some outside linebacker on early downs, moving inside linebacker on some other downs. Board was in on some early downs, but mainly the key thing was Board was playing third down because Hamilton was needed by that point on the back end of the defense and was playing a deep safety basically every down basis. They didn't have a great other dime back option. They did have a little bit of Brandon Stevens still in that role as a sixth defensive back, but primarily it was Board being on the field for any down that they really needed him, with Harrison on for some early downs where he wasn't an outside linebacker. But the handwriting was a little bit on the wall, I thought, as soon as they started having the Board on for some, on a by series basis where they were alternating between Board and Simpson, because that's an open competition signal. It's not a we like this guy in this situation and that guy in that situation, let's make this work kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's a who's better.
Yeah, an in-game open competition, and never a good thing, I think, when you're the incumbent and that becomes a thing. And I don't think we saw it, it's testing my memory here. If we go back to Mike McDonald's first year, I think they went through some evolutionary stuff as well, not to the same extent that the 2024 defense did. And certainly I don't think struggled to the same level that the 2024 right. defense did. And so some of that I chalk up to, okay, first year coordinator, there's probably naturally going to be some of those evolutionary here. Let's try this. Let's try that. That didn't work. Okay. Now let's try this over here sort of thing that goes on until you kind of find your footing. But with this specific player and or groups of players in this specific role, it was a little more than that. It wasn't just the kind of natural evolutionary stuff. It's like, hey, there might be a person that's playing better than you. We think there's the potential that somebody could play better than you in that role, and we're going to give them an opportunity.
Right. And that's obviously terrible news for a second-year incumbent player to be replaced by a, UDFA journeyman, and that's what Board was in terms of coming back to the team for his second tour of duty. It wasn't a good thing. And then obviously the way they ended up the year, he's just playing special teams and he's playing a backup inside linebacker role in some blowouts, which the Ravens had several. And so he was able to get on the field for a little bit of time during those. But I'm trying to remember the last time a young player, a guy in year 1, 2, 3, has taken such a giant step backwards for the Ravens, where he'd gone from being the starter to, now this isn't going to work, we're you're out of there.
It's a good question. I thought about that during the year too. I remember thinking about that. I don't think anybody came to mind. I was kind of like really grasping to think of names. And, there's also kind of the overall messaging, I think, because we saw this with Marcus Williams. We saw it with Eddie Jackson, where it's sort of a clear signal that this is about performance. Now, some of it was probably about attitude, because we've heard some of the off the field stuff too, but just in terms of, not being happy with role. But it was also pretty clear on field messaging, in my opinion, about performance, regardless of what your pedigree is, right? If you're not performing, we'll make a change. And so, I think that was kind of a message across the board. But if you're Trenton, it had to be tough. That had to be a tough pill to swallow, because it seemed like the runway was cleared, right, for this, and didn't go the way he or even the team expected, I'm sure.
Yeah, big changes, not just to the players, but to the coaching staff that accrued during the offseason. Bring in Pagano effectively was almost like hiring above the secondary coach, and he ended up leaving, of course. So it's the kind of thing that you know, it doesn't look great. Obviously the last year where they went through these kind of in-season machinations where they had to completely change a lot of position groups was in 2019. That year was an unbelievable recovery of a defense. You know, basically had to flush the entire inside linebacker position, get two new nose tackles, go to a overload of race car packages because of a lack of quality defensive line pass rushers. They made the trade for Marcus Peters, of course, which was an enormous part of that. I've never seen a team recover in season like that, but the 2024 Ravens, about the closest you'll ever see. They were the offensive line and that the defense as a whole made an incredible recovery, and it basically began at exactly the same time in week 10, after week 10, I should say. I think they might have even won that game. That might have been the Cincinnati game, but the very following week, the defense all of a sudden became the best unit in the entire NFL for the rest of the year. And the offense basically had no more obstacles to anything that they wanted to try and do from that point forward.
It really was a drastic turnaround. And I guess obviously the names are different because, you know, different years from 2019 to 2024. But you took your LJ Fort and Josh Bynes and brought in, you know, I'll raise you Malik Harrison and Chris Borg, this time around. And then obviously the things that they did in the secondary to kind of stabilize the back end of the defense too. So credit to them, because it did not look like that was going to be a possibility at one point during the season, that they just weren't going to be able to get it right. But they did more than just, you know, kind of plug the holes. They excelled, like you said.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's go back and talk some more about Simpson. This year coming into it, he will be in competition with Teddy Buchanan, I would assume, for the weak side linebacker role. Buchanan, a fourth round pick. In a lot of ways, Simpson has to be better in order to win the job. Because you've got a first-year player and a third-year player. And just when you're in direct competitions like this, the team should and will favor the player with a lower tenure, because they have more of that player's future that belongs to them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's another tough situation. I mean, you look at what we've already talked about in terms of going into 2024 and how the runway looked cleared, sort of again – right. Okay. Now the veterans are gone. Is some young guys in the fold, but okay. You know, you've been in the defense. You should have at least that advantage in terms of knowledge of the defense. You've played in games at the NFL level, so you've got that on your ledger as well. But to the point that you just made, there's going to be an opportunity for these younger players too, by virtue of them being younger players. And so if you slip up at all again, you know, you could find yourself back in the same situation, which, you know, obviously we got a long way to go. We haven't even got to the 2025 season, but if things were to play out similarly, that's probably the death nail in a lot of ways, you know, if you were to have a repeat of 2024.
Yeah. Tavares Gooden would be a good example of a guy who went through this process, and his career was shortcut with the Ravens. And he didn't get nearly as much on-field time, but I think he was gone after three seasons in the beginning of his fourth. But I may be wrong. It might have been his third season. And, you know, it's not like the Ravens have a real shortage of options here. They have Higgins, the guy from Iowa, is here. You know, a slower guy, but a guy who has done a lot of really positive things, amazingly, in pass defense in college. And then you compare him to Simpson, who's just he's actually been a very competent run defender, I think, a pretty good tackler as things have gone. But the problem has been he's a converted safety coming to linebacker, so you really expect him to maybe be better at some of the things about you always admonish me for expecting too soon out of inside linebackers, and correctly so, Michael. I'm not saying I'm accused here in such a way. I do want inside linebackers to understand what's going on behind them, and that is one of the most difficult things to learn about inside linebacker play. But coming from safety, you know, you hope that a portable skill is going to be understanding the route trees and whatnot, and the route combinations that can go on in level two and level three, and how to react to those. And that just is where he really fell apart. 9.3 yards per target, 125.8 opposition passer rating. There's not one thing I can pick out of that season that's well. And I think they completed the 28 or 29 out of 33 passes thrown in his direction. So admittedly, some of that is screen passes that would have been largely in front of him and whatnot, but not contested in any way. But that's still an unbelievable amount of passing success to have against an inside linebacker.
Yeah, and as always, context is important. I mean, when he was playing that role in college under, I think, Brent Venables was their defensive coordinator before he left to, I think, take the head job at Oklahoma, and then Simpson's last year at Clemson, a guy who's already on staff got promoted to DC, and he wanted to play him more as an inside backer as opposed to kind of that hybrid nickel safety linebacker, whatever you want. I'm sure they had a name for that role when Trenton was in it. But, you know, it can depend on what you're being asked to do in that system. Yes, you're playing more coverage snaps in that role, but what are they asking you to look at? What kind of routes are you seeing in college versus what you see in the NFL? There's the physical part of it, and I don't think anybody would deny that he has the athleticism to play in coverage. But, you know, it's not always an apples to apples thing, because again, it depends on the context of what was put on your plate in college, as opposed to when you come into the NFL. And we know the Ravens system, they definitely, starting, I guess, with McDonald, definitely tried to simplify it. You hear the players talk about it all the time in terms of the teaching of it and the language, right? So that they didn't have a different word for, you know, let's say you want to give 500 looks in the season, you have five different words to give 500 defensive looks, right? We can simplify that way down into, you know, sort of buckets of families in terms of language, and then still give that same number of looks. 500 is, of course, an extreme example, but I'm just saying. But that still had to be a lot. And so one of the things, and I'm sure we'll get to this when we kind of talk about strengths and weaknesses for Trenton, I think this is true for all linebackers and maybe all players, but particularly at linebacker, is eye discipline. You know, what are you looking at? What should you be looking at? Because I know a lot of people will say, well, play recognition, he needs to improve his play recognition. Okay, there's a mental component to that, but there's also a physical thing that I think starts with your eyes. Are you looking at the things you're supposed to be looking at? And yeah. I think you could see as the season went on, he was seeing too much, right? And it was confusing him, and it was getting him out of position, as opposed to, and I think I've used this quote on your show many, many times before, but old linebacker coach in college, now I'm blanking on his name, but he coached Khalil Mack when Khalil Mack was at Buffalo. And he used to say, you know, if you want to be a good linebacker, if you see a lot, you won't see anything at all. But if you see a little, you'll see a lot. And so his thing was, if you're keying in on the right things to help you diagnose what's happening, whether that's in run defense or in coverage, then that's all you need. And you'll be, you know, more often than not in position to defend those plays or even make plays. If you're seeing everything, right, the whole, all of the motion, all of the eye candy, all of the formation alignment stuff, it's going to slow you down because there's no way you can process all that information.
And you know, it's unreasonable in particular for a young player to process all the information. Roquan Smith be another matter. And in fact, one of the things I really love about Roquan Smith is you can see pre-snap that he's looking at the other side of the formation. When he's, if there's a running back who's split in some way and he's forced to cover that, you know, sometimes in a slot position, and they're more than likely they're going to motion into a different position, but if they don't, you know, he's got responsibility there. He'll look to the other side of the formation to try and figure out what crossing routes will come, you know, off that. And that's exactly what they're probably trying to do, is they're probably trying to work behind him on something. He knows it, and he knows what to look for. Part of it is that I'm sure Roquan is looking with focus at what he needs to look at on the other side of that field, as opposed to just, you know, kind of wide-eyed, you know, child looking back and forth and trying to look at all the shiny objects which are distracting him. There's another point you made here that I think is really important, is that, you know, with a young player, there is a desire frequently, based on the guy being an exceptional college player, and I think Simpson, it's fair to put him in that category, to think this is the perfect defense for him because he can do anything at all. We can make him into the most flexible piece that ever was. We can create a new position for him. They just talk about the Ravens playing positionless defense. It perks my ears up. It makes me think, nah, that's not really true. They'll find a player that they can find a role from that's very different than anybody else plays. And Kyle Hamilton is the perfect example of a guy who can take away the strong side of the football field. You can literally play him at slot corner and have him take away wide receiver screens to that side of the field. But that's not for everyone. And the notion of a positionless defense is not really what the Ravens do. The Ravens try and make a player play a position well, and then they'll see if they can expand on that role and give him other responsibilities. They could do that with Hamilton. It didn't work out with Simpson. It hasn't so far. I don't expect that it will. I think the best hope for him is become a good weak side linebacker. And I would warn that the best thing for Malachi Starks at this point is become a great free safety. Don't try and be everything to everybody. I don't think the Ravens are actually going to do it because I think they really actually need him there, yeah, particularly with Ardarius Washington gone. But I hope that the thought of him being a positionless player is something they can push a year down the field in terms of really plugging into any kind of versatility that he has. He's a better player than Simpson, so he might be able to pull it off. But the Ravens very, very badly need to be a good free safety, and the Ravens badly need Trent Simpson to be a good weak side linebacker.
Yeah, and I think we've seen that with the Ravens, probably other teams as well, where they, what you just described, right? You get these guys who seem to have all this versatility in college, and you just expect that to immediately be the same thing in the NFL. And we saw it even early on with Kyle, with as great as he's become. It was probably around that Saints game where they kind of really primarily locked him into the nickel role. And that's where he really started to take off from that point. It was all, and he talked about it early on in the season where, you know, they were asking him about some of the struggles, particularly like the Miami game and some of the early games. And they said, is the game moving too fast? And he said, no, my mind is moving too fast. It's not the game. I have to slow my mind down. And I think by giving him that primary position, he still did other things, even from that Saints game on, but primarily he played nickel. I think that helped him slow his mind down by not having to focus and think about all of these different things at these three or four different positions. And so, yeah, hopefully they won't do that with Malachi. And then, you can think of whether it's Kamalai Correa, you know, you can think about all these different guys over the years.
It's a great example too.
Yeah. You can think about it. And it's just, it's a cool idea, right? When you think about it. And obviously if the player can pull it off, it's extremely valuable to have a guy who can do that. But sometimes, you know, you got to crawl before you can run with some of these players.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. So what do we want to talk about this? We talked about the kind of the conversion he went through, but what didn't happen. I still think we don't really know who Trenton Simpson is. And this is what I was saying at the beginning of the 24 season. Really respect, of course, Jason Smith of Huddle It Up Films, a guy who came on the show and I believe was the one who talked about Trenton Simpson last year. And he was extremely excited about Simpson in a way that was maybe a little over the top for the time. It ended up being over the top, so let's put it that way. This doesn't mean he was wrong at the time, but he really ascribed more value to what had happened in those 26 snaps or however many he played against Pittsburgh in that final game than the fact that he'd kind of been off the field, but I'm sorry, it was the 26 snaps versus his entire final year at Clemson. That's what it was. I asked him a question, which is more relevant? I realized the more recent experience is more pertinent, but there's also a lot less of it.
Right.
So I still think I was in this position last year. I don't think we know who Trenton Simpson is. I think there's still a chance he can be a three down linebacker. Not a great chance, but the building blocks potentially are still there if he can get back focused on the position and work towards exactly that goal. I think he could be a mobile two down will that they take him off the field on third down, that the passing responsibilities are what he really can't handle, I think, anymore. I think he could be just a will linebacker backup who is a special teams player primarily. And I think we are going to see that. I think we'll see him go back to a lot of special teams this year.
Yeah, I think, you know, we have to think about how long he's been working at this position, right? We just talked about his college career. It was really that last season, because I think he came out as a junior. I think he only had 3 years at Clemson. It's really that last season that he became more of a, like, primary inside linebacker, right? So that's 2022, right? Then 2023, his rookie season, didn't play a ton. You know, because you still had Roquan and PQ. So, you know, didn't play a ton there, kind of mixed him in some spot stuff here and there, some cleanup stuff, right? So didn't get a ton more experience in games. I assume, you know, during the offseason, before the season started in practices, he was gaining some experience, but not a lot of in-game experience. And then you had 2024, which is probably since that last year at Clemson, his most in-game experience at the inside linebacker position, and then obviously the most inside the most experience at the NFL level at that position. So I think there's still probably a fair amount of learning that's going on for him, because we talked about those first 2 years at Clemson, where I remember doing this pod with Denard, the Fire Zone show, me and Denard Melton. We looked at Simpson when they drafted him, and we were looking at those first 2 years and just how much coverage. I mean, it was like over 250 coverage snaps his first 2 years. So he was not doing that kind of primary inside linebacker role or those primary inside linebacker things very much at all those first 2 years. So I think you're right. There may be a little bit of an unknown because he's still not been given a tremendous amount of time to settle into this one particular role with a lot of in-game experience outside of last year, right? That was mm-hmm. the first time. And, you know, the run defense, like you said, I think was probably pretty solid. And so you feel like, okay, well, you've got something you can hang your hat on. But the fact that the pass defense, you know, was the struggle that it was in this league, right? And we all know what passing means in the NFL. That's disappointing. But I think that there's still an opportunity to kind of bounce back. But it would, I won't say it would surprise me, because I think it's in him. But I'll have to see it. Let me frame it that way. I'll need to see it.
Fair enough.
And I'll need to see it over a while, right? Over a number of games to see some consistency there. But I think he has it in him. I wouldn't rule it out.
All right. Well, let's talk about a good season and a great season for Trenton Simpson. What's a good season from your perspective?
All right. I was thinking about this. And as I was this first scenario, kind of running it around in my mind, I was like, well, that doesn't sound good. If he's still part of a rotation, that doesn't sound like a good season. But I guess the way I was envisioning it was not necessarily still part of a rotation in terms of he comes off the field, but he's on the field, but maybe moved into some different roles while, whether it's Buchanan or whoever the other linebacker comes in on the field. And this is going to get like probably too far down in the weeds, but I just had like a real specific scenario in my head where I thought, okay, well, that wouldn't be so bad for Trenton, for Trent Simpson. Let's say you bring in one of these other young linebackers and you say, you know what, in this particular package, in these particular situations, you are going to be the A-gap blitzer. All we want you to do is go in there and kill the A-gap. Whoever's there, just absolutely kill them. But Trenton, you're still going to be in a coverage role, whether that's zone, whether that's man, whatever. We're going to still have you in, you know, the role that probably requires a little bit more processing, right? Mm-hmm. You think about, like,
if you're looking for a better way to unwind, focus, or even get a good night's sleep, listen up. Let me tell you about Mood, the online cannabis company that's changing the game when it comes to functional gummies. They've crafted a whole line up of federally legal THC blends designed to help with everything from stress to sleep to mental clarity and even some spicier needs if you're into that. Now, what makes Mood different? They go beyond just THC. They pair it with herbs and adaptogens to create targeted effects that you won't find in any other dispensary. And every gummy is made with pesticide-free, small-farm American cannabis, so you're getting quality that you can trust. I've tried their sleep gummies, and let me tell you, it takes about 15 minutes, and I'm out cold, no grogginess, no weird side effects, getting some of the best sleep I've gotten in my life when I take one of these gummies. And if you need a mood boost, there are Epic Euphoria gummies, game changers. And right now, Mood is giving listeners 20% off their first order by using the promo code RAVENS at checkout. So head on over to mood.com, find the perfect gummy for whatever life throws your way, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS to save 20%.
A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS Certified Organic Green Mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits. at avocadomattress.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Peanut, right? Way back in the day. Like when Peanut and Kenny Young were kind of sort of splitting next to CJ. And it was like, just go kill this gap, right? Don't worry about processing. Don't worry about, you know, figuring anything out. Just hit that gap. So if he's still on the field, right, but he's also sharing snaps with some other young linebacker, but it's in that kind of role shift or specific role kind of thing, I think that that's okay. I think that that's okay. Because initially I was thinking, well, he's in a rotation, but he's kind of the primary guy. So yeah, he comes off the field some, but he doesn't come off the field nearly as much as he did last year. And that'd be good. I was like, no, that really wouldn't be good. So I tried to think of another way where he's in a rotation, but he's not necessarily coming off the field, where that could still qualify as good. Because great, which I'm not going to jump to, but I know we'll talk about, I think that's a lot clearer, like what great right. would look like.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And here's the problem with all of the great things people can think about how a player can play on defense is that they never, I know you do, by the way, I'm not excusing you of this in any way, shape, or form, but is they never think about what is the resulting sacrifice of that strange position that you're asking a player to play. So, for instance, let's say Teddy Buchanan is on the field to rush the quarterback or to have a specific coverage role. It really doesn't matter. Whatever you say for Simpson's role is, oh, he's going to be an overhang player. He's going to rush the quarterback, and he's going to do this. And my resulting question is what is the defense going to give up to get there? Because there's only three choices. You give up a defensive lineman, okay, including one of your edge rushers, and take them off the field. You give up a different inside linebacker, or you give up somebody in the secondary. Those are your three choices. And, you know, generally speaking, when you're in passing downs, you're already in a position where you didn't want your inside linebackers on the field to start with. You know, right. the primary choice of NFL teams right now is to go with one inside linebacker on third down. There are some committed nickel teams still out there, and the Ravens had been one until week three of last year. But they're, you know, teams that have enough safeties to do it now are more likely to play dime than not across the NFL. And, you know, there's just too little of the weird dime, the 32 dime going on right now that people want to play three on the line of scrimmage and go two wide. So the Ravens don't have that sort of variation. The Ravens have a lot of variation in terms of defensive package relative to some other teams. So that doesn't really work for me. I think that if describing it as a platoon is the way I would do it, and that's where I think a good season is for him. Finds a valuable platoon role where he excels on early downs, and he becomes another plus player in the Ravens defense, returns to a big role in special teams, and there's a lot of departing snaps to fill, so boy, do the Ravens need him to do that. I think that would be a good year.
Yeah, special teams, he's going to be a core special teams guy, I think, unless – and I guess when we get to the great part, if the great were to happen, then that might lessen some of his special team role.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I agree completely. Go ahead with your great season then. You sound like you
got it. Yeah, I've kind of been leading up to it. So basically, you're in the PQ role, you know, not necessarily comparing them as players, but you're in that role where you're on the field all the time, next to row. You never come off the field, no matter the situation. You know, that, like we just mentioned, probably lessens your special teams role in some way, but that's okay. I mean, obviously you'll take that trade off. If you're in that role, the assumption is you're playing well enough to have earned it. And so, you know, whatever sacrifice you have to make on special teams, you're willing to do that if he's playing at that level where he's earned the right to be on the field all of the time. So to me, that's the clear, like I struggled with the good one because I was like, is it a platoon or is it a role? I don't know. But the great one, I think, is pretty clear.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. So I basically said the same thing, but I'll just say it. Switch goes on in pass coverage, and he wins a three-down roll over Buchanan, brings at least one wow factor to the field that is his first calling card, whether that's speed to the point of attack, delayed pass rush, coverage, nose for the football, ability to shed and avoid blacks, whatever it might be. It'd be one more new thing we haven't really seen before. If he does play three downs, he's probably done as a special teams player. So I don't consider that a bad thing by any stretch, by the way. You need to keep your starters healthy, and part of that is not playing on special teams. But there is a certain stigma as a linebacker, and particularly a fast linebacker, that goes with standing over for 20 minutes with the coach there. And I watched Patrick Queen do it for, you know, a couple of years, and it was ugly with Rob Ryan over there and not getting things done. Those guys clearly didn't have a lot to talk about. So it was this is the thing. By the way, I'm going to harken back to a moment now that is 5 years gone. But Patrick Queen, when he was initially drafted, and so that would have been in 2020, right? Before the 2020 season, I believe you and I were on that doing that draft show together.
We were.
And I
remember the reaction.
I remember. And Josh. He's getting questions coming. It's like, does Ken need a hug and things like that? But I was incredibly upset that they didn't draft Xavier McKinney.
That's right.
Who has become a great NFL player for Queen. I was obviously not good about hiding my feelings about that draft pick. And I'm surprised that no one has latched onto that in the way they've latched onto the Derwin James thing. I keep bringing up Derwin James.
Yeah, so I remember that one reason, too. But
all right, let's go move on. Talk a little bit about Keaton Mitchell and 2023. One of the greatest per snap productivity seasons for any running back in NFL history. Probably the greatest if you define it properly, which is 40 plus carries. You have to be kind of careful in there. And then 2024, he really never appeared to be fully recovered from the injury, and he finally got a few carries at the end of the year, 15 carries for 30 yards, most of them coming in week 17 and 18 of the season. Had to be incredibly frustrating for him.
Yeah, I think that was the thing, and I think everybody kind of realizes that now. Like, he just was not fully recovered from that injury, which was a pretty significant one. I don't remember specifically what it was, but anytime Harbaugh or anybody has been asked about it, they talked about it being a really significant kind of injury. But yeah, you think about it, I think it was, what, 7 regular season games if you count Detroit? I think he only had like 1 snap in Detroit. I don't know that we should even count that. But like the next 6 games, it's like, you've got at least a 20-yard run in each of those 6 games. And I'm like, the explosive element that he added at that point, right? This is pre-Derrick Henry, right? We're talking Gus Edwards, Justice Hill, maybe a little bit of Mel Gordon mixed in there. So to add that element to the offense, obviously it was exciting. Everybody was looking, you know, towards the end of that season about, man, what, before he was injured, obviously, what's this going to look like in the future if it's this good now? And he's just, you know, getting his feet wet in terms of getting into games and stuff. You know, sky's the limit for where this is going to go. And unfortunately, you know, he suffers the injury, and just last year just never could seem to get back to where he was. Obviously, physically started, I think, to get a little bit more comfortable towards the end of the year, maybe doing a little bit more on special teams than he was on offense. You know, he had some returns. He was in, you know, on some of the coverage units as well, but you're hoping that another season, and I don't think I've heard about any setbacks or anything so far over this offseason, hopefully another healthy healthy offseason allows him to kind of, you know, get back to where he was, because then you think about that player in 2023 with Derrick Henry, and it's like, wow, that's, I mean, as good as they were last year. And, you know, what did Henry have, like 300 plus something carries? Adding that dimension, just it's almost hard to fathom what the offense could look like.
Yeah, I love the idea of them even on the field together in some pony backfield situations. So the Ravens do have other players who can do something very similar to what he does. I mean, Zay Flowers obviously can and has in terms of being a gadget guy, and LaJonte Wester be a guy. And I didn't make myself clear there. If they're on the field together, I'm assuming that Mitchell would be somehow split wide and not necessarily the backfield, but he has actually been in the backfield before with other big backs in 23 with Edwards, I guess. But I love the idea of having him being another element of misdirection the Ravens can bring to the table. He doesn't give you great blocking, but he would give you fantastic misdirection. And if you ignore him at your own peril in terms of Lamar making a choice about who to give the ball to.
Absolutely. I mean, it's I can remember a few of those plays that you mentioned from 2023 where he's sort of a jet runner, right? Sort of a jet sweep type of runner. And yeah, it's a pick your poison situation, because if you're a step late, if you hesitate and he gets the ball, or Lamar keeps the ball, or Derrick Henry has the ball, somebody's going to have an angle. They're going to hit a crease, and it could be a very, very long touchdown run, or just a long run in general. So yeah, that would be really exciting to be able to get him healthy and add that element to the offense. And, you know, I'm optimistic about it. I think that it can happen, but you know, we still got a ways to go, right? He's sort of starting to begin the early parts of the offseason program, and you know, we'll see how it goes.
The player who is reminiscently, you know, generates optimism for this is Lardarius Webb. The most serious injury to a Ravens rookie that I can recall, and somebody else, I'm sure you're gonna be able to find one that I've forgotten about, but Lardarius Webb in 2009 looked like a complete stud when he got hurt. And it was a shame. DaCosta said he'd never been more upset by an injury at the time, which by the way, you always got to be. It's kind of like saying I have a favorite child kind of thing, which he did some video on that recently about his favorite draft picks. Anyway, Webb was effectively lost for that 2010 season and was not good at all that year. But in 2011, he came back and he was the best cornerback in the entire NFL. And that was a league that had Darrelle Revis in his late prime at that point, still hanging around. But Lardarius Webb was the man. And then, unfortunately, he got hurt again in 2012, and I think derailed with those two injuries what would have been a Hall of Fame career. At least it's not hard to see it being a Hall of Fame career. Good career anyway, you know, lasted in the league for a few years, but very disappointing that he didn't really maximize what he was. And the next injury to Keaton Mitchell is going to be that much more devastating in terms of the what might have been. But this first injury is one of the worst ever.
Yeah, you'd prefer that he had that initial Lardarius Webb, you know, sort of bounce back, because I think, you know, the other place your mind goes is J.K. Dobbins, right? Where you just are bitten by that bug and their season enders, and you can just never quite get back to the player that you could have been. We'll never know what J.K. Dobbins could have fully been. I mean, we saw glimpses obviously early on, but you know, we never, I think, got to see. We were robbed, you know, of seeing, you know, just what his true full potential could be. So obviously none of us want that for Keaton. And I hope that doesn't happen. And just the little glimpses, even in the very, very small sample size he had last year. I think I even tweeted this play out a while ago. It was in the Houston game, and it wasn't a long game because he didn't, you know, maybe 2 or 3 yards. I don't think he had any really long gains in the few, you know, snaps he had, the few rush attempts he had in that game. But it was a cut. It was a cut in the hole against an unblocked defender. And I'm like, that's it. Okay, that's the guy that I remember from 2023. It wasn't this long breakaway run. Obviously, we know he has top-end speed. But the ability to put that kind of strain and load on your ankles, your lower body, on your knees, your hips, your ankles, I said, okay, that's an encouraging sign. I like to see that. And, of course, he had a couple of decent returns, too, as a kick returner, couple games. I guess he had some decent ones in the Bills game. So, you know, I think the long speed is, I'm not necessarily concerned about that. Will it be? And I know he posted the MPH number, early this year on his Instagram. I think it was like 22.4 or something like that. And I think they had clocked his highest, in his rookie year at 22.6. So he's like, hey, wow. I'm right there. I'm almost back. Right. So I wasn't really too worried about that part coming back, but sort of the lateral agility and the lateral movement ability, that was kind of the part that I was concerned about. But that one little cut in that Texans game encouraged me.
Yeah, I just rewatched that Texans game today, in fact, and the play that you really saw, and it's one of the weird ones, it's his only catch of the season, and he went for 28 yards. Mm-hmm. And there's some elusiveness on that play. There's some speed on that play. And in NFL, in Ravens history, it's one of the longest in terms of per target during a season kind of things. There's one player, you might know the answer to this, but one player in Ravens history who, if you take away any minimum on targets, it is one target, had 43.0 yards per target. Do you
gotta be Gus, right? Was it Gus?
No, Gus left the Ravens with the highest yards per target in team history.
Okay, because he had that one real long one, I think against the Giants or something, but it was like a scramble play.
Yeah, or something.
Yeah, yeah. But okay, not Gus. Who was it?
This is one boy. It was Joe Flacco in his rookie year.
Okay.
I had a handoff. I think it was to Troy Smith, and Troy Smith threw off the top. The Oakland linebacker was slow covering, and he outran him down the left sideline, made the play, kind of diving out to make the ball, catch the ball, but was pretty cool. All right, let's move on, because there's so little to talk about in terms of Keaton Mitchell's 2024 season. It's obviously very depressing, but let's talk about what expectations are reasonable. Give me a good season. Give me to start with for Keaton.
All right, good, I think, would be if you can. This is going to be similar to your good for Trenton Simpson. If you can be a part of a platoon and you have an established role, right? This is what you do. Right. In terms of your part of the platoon, if we're thinking along the lines of Derrick Henry, Justice Hill, Keaton Mitchell, I know Rasheen Ali is still a factor too, but just for purposes of the good season, you're in that platoon, but you have an established role in that platoon. And so it's not like this thing that's going to necessarily be, you know, one game you're in there for 10 or 15 snaps and the next game you get like zero, right? And all your other snaps are okay return. Now, this is something where you're in there on a pretty consistent basis. And I don't know what the numbers would be, but just something where the role is more determined than sort of just, hey, it's in the game, it's a blowout, why don't you go in there and eat some carries and give, you know, the other two guys a rest. Something other than that, to me, would be a good season for him.
Yeah. So nice change of pace back. I like that. I said something different. I said beats out Ali for a spot on the 53 as the third running back, because I think that's his primary competition right now. Mm-hmm. Plays a minimum of 150 snaps with 40-plus carries. Maybe a little aggressive, maybe not. Flashes some of the speed and contact balance, which made him so dangerous as a rookie. I don't want to go any further than that. I don't have any specific yards per carry expectation. And some of these I go qualitative and some of them I go quantitative. But in this one, definitely, I want to go qualitative with Mitchell. I don't know what to expect. And obviously, the fewer carries you have, the more variation is possible in terms of what might happen. I do think the carry number is probably important. That I'm not expecting a year where he takes over for Justice Hill as the number two back, because he's back. And, you know, why do we need Justice Hill? We've got Keaton Mitchell kind of. And I think Justice Hill is a critical player for the Ravens. I think he's he's probably their number two back pretty much no matter what, unless somebody gets hurt. And I think that Mitchell, hopefully he'll provide some value on kickoff returns as well.
Okay. Well, that's going to take some of the thunder out of my great season, because that's what my great season was going to be. Cause I was thinking, I was like, you know, obviously that would be extremely optimistic, because not just from a runner or from a pass catcher standpoint, but that means that he will have to have significantly improved his pass protection to overtake Justice Hill in that role. But to me, if we're using the word great, that's what a great season would look like, where not that Justice Hill is completely phased out. Obviously, you know, he's a utility guy, right? He does so many different things well. He's going to have a role, but Keaton has a season where it's kind of, he's the clear number two. Right. He's improved enough in pass pro where they can trust him in those situations. Obviously, we know what type of runner he can be, has a dangerous element as a pass catcher as well, you know, after he's caught the ball with the ball in his hand. So I think, to me, that would constitute a great season, where you make it sort of no doubt that, oh, that's the number two. Like, as much as we like Justice Hill, this is the new number two guy, clearly behind Derrick Henry. And maybe even to the point where people are like, look, if Derrick's only got one more season beyond 2025, we feel very comfortable with Keaton moving into like our that to me, like, great, you know, it's a word that we probably overuse and we shouldn't, but if we're talking about a truly great season, that's what it would look like to me.
That's you define it however you like, and that's perfectly reasonable to say that to me. That would be, and maybe you could give me where you think this falls out in terms of the spectrum of potential outcomes. To me, that would be like 95th, 96th, 97th percentile if that were to happen. And I like to set my grade at the 80th.
Okay.
So it's a grade is pretty attainable. I'll read you mine. It's quick. Injury to Henry or Hill forces him into a larger role and he stays healthy. Contributes as a runner and receiver. Monken finds a way to utilize him when Henry is in the game, continues kickoff return duties, and excels with more returns mandated by rule. Remember, they have that 35-yard line touchback rule this year. So going to be a lot of returns. And the return men and the coverage units are both going to be pressured into playing well. I personally, I don't believe that they're going to do a lot of intentional kicking in the end zone. It was 30% last year, and I think that was about the number. Then I would expect it to be something like, you know, 12 to 15% this year, with them being very selective about when they do it.
Yeah, and I think he showed some promise as a returner as the season went on, because, you know, the first thing you think about obviously is the speed. Of course, that's kind of a no-brainer. But the other thing I think you have to be able to do as a good kick returner as opposed to punt returner is you're going to have to be able to break some tackles. You're going to have to be able to run through some contact on some level. And he's not a big guy, but he showed some ability to kind of run through some wraps, run through some kind of one-arm lunges at his leg, his lower body. And I said, all right, if we got that, then that can take, you know, what maybe would have been 7, 8, 9, 10, 11-yard return, and maybe we turn into a 20, 30, 40-yard return or more. So I think there's some potential there with him as a returner. And I don't know that – I'd have to go back and look. I don't know if he did it in college at all. But, you know, that obviously can take some time. And, of course, they've got a track record with developing guys who didn't return in college to pretty good returners in the NFL.
I'll leave you this statistic about missed tackles forced. His very first game where he got any carries was that Seattle game. And he broke 8 tackles in that game, according to PFF, at 132 of his 138 yards after contact. If I look at Derrick Henry's 2024 season, the most tackles he ever broke in a game was 9. And think about Keaton Mitchell carried the ball 9 times in that game, broke 8 tackles. Derrick Henry had a hell of a lot more tackles or carries than that to pile up 89 missed tackles in the course of a season, but no more than 9 in a game. So his elusiveness and contact balance was so mouthwatering in terms of what you were getting in 2023. It was such a devastating injury to live through.
Yeah, and it was an awesome surprise, because I know there was a lot of buzz about him in camp. A lot of players talked about how fast he was. And, you know, I guess people who had been to camp and, you know, maybe saw a little bit in preseason, but we didn't, because now, didn't he have an injury or something? He didn't play a whole lot in preseason, did he? That I remember. There was something he was dealing with, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he was out until like week 8 of the year. So,
yeah, okay. So, yeah. So it like came out of nowhere, this explosion. To the scene, and you're like, now this, you already got this really dynamic offense in 2023. This is, you know, before the addition of Derrick Henry, and you're like, wow, now you add this guy to it. But now again, you think about, okay, well, now we had this great offensive season, another historic season with Derrick Henry added, and now if you can, you know, bring Mitchell back to what he was in 2023, you're just like, man, how every time I think that there's some ceiling on what they can be offensively, they just show me like, no, there actually isn't. We can, there's another level that we can go to.
Yeah. It's been awfully fun to watch this team play offensive football, moving up and down the field. And I've always been a defensive guy personally. I love the way the 2000 Ravens were built and the way they've, you know, could just snuff the life and, you know, create this progressive despair in opposing offenses. And as great as the Ravens defenses have been, even in recent years, they really haven't had that. They haven't been able to, you know, get offenses to basically give up. That 2000 Ravens defense, watching them again this offseason, they just, you know, I think of Corey Dillon slamming the football to the ground, you know, pissed off at his offensive line and, you know, walking off the field. They just, they want to give up.
Yeah, just quit. Yeah.
Michael, always a pleasure talking football with you. Can you tell folks where, you know, the Fire Zone show, tell them about that and where they can talk football with you online.
Yeah. So, anywhere that you can get audio podcasts, the Fire Zone show, it's the Deep Cover podcast. Fire Zone I do with Denard Melton. Deep Cover I do with Kerry Stevenson and Chris Aguilera. I'm getting old, man. I can't remember who
the
shows with anymore. we've slowed up the pace in recent years, but you know, we actually put out some stuff not too long ago, pre-draft, and then I think we even did a post-draft thing, kind of looking at the Ravens draft class. So, you know, maybe we'll pick it back up a little bit. I'm getting a little long in the tooth for podcasting, but you never know. We'll see how it goes. But you can check those out, and you can find me on X, I guess, what we're calling it these days, at Abukari, Abukari. And I'm on Blue Sky too, but don't quote me with the Blue Sky handle. It's still Abukari, but I think it's like Abukari at bluesky.social. So don't quote that, but you can probably find me, because I don't know that there's a bunch of Abukaris on Blue Sky. So
All right. Thanks so much for coming on, Michael. Other folks out there, if you'd like to be on a film study short this summer, got plenty of time. We'll be doing this expectation series for about the next 2 months, really leading right up to camp. And I've got some time to actually fold in some other shorts too. Particularly, I think if you have a technical idea, something where you want to do an analytics project, something where you want to come up with some new metric, something where you want to do a visualization and because you think it shows something important about football, I'm into all those kind of things. Would love to hear from you. Michael, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Ken. Always a blast.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it, it's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply. Available in app only.